Chapter 29. Breakfasted. Supplied with these facts, Lily leaned a while over the side, giving herself up to a leisurely enjoyment of the spectacle before her. Unclouded sunlight enveloped sea and shore in a bath of purest radiancy. The purpling waters drew a sharp white line of foam at the base of the shore. Against its irregular eminences, hotels and villas flashed from the grayish verdure of olive and eucalyptus, and the background of bare and finely penciled mountains quivered in a pale intensity of light. How beautiful it was, and how she loved beauty! As he had always felt, that her sensibility in this direction made up for certain obtusenesses of feeling, of which she was less proud. And during the last 3 months as he had indulged it passionately. The Dorsets' invitation to go abroad with them had come as an almost miraculous release from crushing difficulties, and her faculty for renewing herself in new scenes, and casting off problems of conduct as easily as the surroundings in which they had arisen, made the mere change from one place to another seem, not merely a postponement, but a solution of her troubles. Moral complications existed for her only in the environment that had produced them. She did not mean to slight or ignore them, but they lost their reality when they changed their background. She could not have remained in New York without repaying the money she owed to Treanor. To acquit herself of that odious debt, she might even have faced a marriage with Rosedale. But the accident of placing the Atlantic between herself and her obligations made them dwindle out of sight, as if they had been milestones and as he had traveled past them. Her 2 months on the Sabrina had been especially calculated to aid this illusion of distance. As he had been plunged into new scenes, and had found in them a renewal of old hopes and ambitions. The cruise itself charmed her as a romantic adventure. She was vaguely touched by the names and scenes amid which she moved, and had listened to Ned Silverton reading Theocritus by moonlight, as the yacht rounded the Sicilian promontories, with a thrill of the nerves that confirmed her belief in her intellectual superiority. But the weeks at Cannes and Nice had really given her more pleasure. The gratification of being welcomed in high company, and of making her own ascendancy felt there, so that she found herself figuring once more as the beautiful Miss Barton, the interesting journal devoted to recording the least movements of her cosmopolitan companions. All these experiences tended to throw into the extreme background of memory the prosaic and sordid difficulties from which as he had escaped. If she was faintly aware of fresh difficulties ahead, she was sure of her ability to meet them. It was characteristic of her to feel that the only problems she could not solve were those with which she was familiar. Meanwhile, she could honestly be proud of the skill with which she had adapted herself to somewhat delicate conditions. She had reason to think that she had made herself equally necessary to her host and hostess. And if only he had seen any perfectly irreproachable means of drawing a financial profit from the situation, there would have been no cloud on her horizon. The truth was that her funds, as usual, were inconveniently low, and to neither Dorset nor his wife could this vulgar embarrassment be safely hinted. Still, the need was not a pressing one. She could worry along, as he had so often done before, with the hope of some happy change of fortune to sustain her, and meanwhile life was gay, and beautiful and easy, and she was conscious of figuring not unworthily in such a setting. She was engaged to breakfast that morning with the Duchess of Belcher, and at 12 o'clock she asked to be set ashore in the gig. Before this he had sent her maid to inquire if she might see Mrs. Dorset. But the reply came back that the latter was tired and trying to sleep. Lily thought she understood the reason of the rebuff. Her hostess had not been included in the Duchess's invitation, though she herself had made the most loyal efforts in that direction. But her grace was impervious to hints, and invited or omitted as she chose. It was not Lily's fault if Mrs. Dorset's complicated attitudes did not fall in with the Duchess's easy gait. The Duchess, who seldom explained herself, had not formulated her objection beyond saying, "She's rather a bore, you know." The only one of your friends I like is that little Mr. Bright. He's funny, but Lily knew enough not to press the point, and was not altogether sorry to be thus distinguished at her friend's expense. Bertha certainly had grown tiresome since he had taken to poetry and Ned Silverton. On the whole, it was a relief to break away now and then from the Sabrina and the Duchess's little breakfast, organized by Lord Hubert with all his usual virtuosity, was the pleasanter to Lily for not including her traveling companions. Dorset, of late, had grown more than usually morose and incalculable, and Ned Silverton went about with an air that seemed to challenge the universe. The freedom and lightness of the ducal intercourse made an agreeable change from these complications, and Lily was tempted, after luncheon, to adjourn in the wake of her companions to the hectic atmosphere of the casino. She did not mean to play. Her diminished pocket money offered small scope for the adventure, but it amused her to sit on a divan, under the doubtful protection of the Duchess's back, while the latter hung above her stakes at a neighboring table. The rooms were packed with the gazing throng which, in the afternoon hours, trickles heavily between the tables, like the Sunday crowd in a lion house. In the stagnant flow of the mass, identities were hardly distinguishable. But Lily presently saw Mrs. Bright cleaving her determined way through the doors, and, in the broad wake she left, the light figure of Mrs. Fisher bobbing after her like a rowboat at the stern of a tug. Mrs. Bright pressed on, evidently animated by the resolve to reach a certain point in the rooms. But Mrs. Fisher, as she passed Lily, broke from her towing line, and let herself float to the girl's side. "Lose her?" she echoed the latter's query, with an indifferent glance at Mrs. Bry's retreating back. I dare say it doesn't matter. I have lost her already. And, as Lily EXP206 greater than claimed, she added, "We had an awful row this morning. You know, of course, that the Duchess chucked her at dinner last night, and she thinks it was my fault, my want of management. The worst of it is, the message, just a mere word by telephone, came so late that the dinner had to be paid for, and Bacassin had run it up. It had been so drummed into him that the Duchess was coming." Mrs. Fisher indulged in a faint laugh at the remembrance. "P paying for what she doesn't get rankles so dreadfully with Louia. I can't make her see that it's one of the preliminary steps to getting what you haven't paid for, and as I was the nearest thing to smash, she smashed me to atoms, poor dear." Lily murmured her commiseration. Impulses of sympathy came naturally to her, and it was instinctive to proffer her help to Mrs. Fisher. "If there's anything I can do, if it's only a question of meeting the Duchess. I heard her say she thought Mr. Bry amusing," but Mrs. Fisher interposed with a decisive gesture. "My dear, I have my pride. The pride of my trade. I couldn't manage the Duchess, and I can't palm off your arts on Louis Bry as mine. I've taken the final step. I go to Paris tonight with the Sam Gormers. They're still in the elementary stage. An Italian prince is a great deal more than a prince to them, and they're always on the brink of taking a courier for one. To save them from that is my present mission." She laughed again at the picture. "But before I go, I want to make my last will and testament. I want to leave you the prize." "Me?" Miss Bart joined in her amusement. "It's charming of you to remember me, dear, but really, you're already so well provided for?" Mrs. Fisher flashed a sharp glance at her. "Are you, though, Lily, to the point of rejecting my offer?" Miss Bart colored slowly. "What I really meant was, that the bride wouldn't in the least care to be so disposed of." Mrs. Fisher continued to probe her embarrassment with an unflinching eye. "What you really meant was that you've snubbed the bride horribly, and you know that they know, Carrie. Oh, on certain sides Louis bristles with perceptions. If you'd even managed to have them asked once on the Sabrina, especially when royalties were coming. But it's not too late," she ended earnestly, "it's not too late for either of you." Lily smiled. "Stay over, and I'll get the Duchess to dine with them. I shan't stay over the Gormers have paid for my salon lit, said Mrs. Fisher with simplicity. Be but get the Duchess, to dine with them all the same. Lily's smile again flowed into a slight laugh. Her friend's importunity was beginning to strike her as irrelevant. I'm sorry I have been negligent about the bride, she began. Oh, as to the bride, it's you I'm thinking of, said Mrs. Fisher abruptly. She paused, and then, bending forward, with a lowered voice, colon, you know we all went on too nice last night, when the Duchess chucked us. It was Louisa's idea, I told her, what I thought of it. Miss Bard assented. Why, yes, I caught sight of you on the way back, at the station. Well, the man who was in the carriage with you, and George Dorset, that horrid little dabham who does society notes from the Riviera, had been dining with us at Nice. And he's telling everybody that you and Dorset came back alone after midnight. Alone? When he was with us. Lily laughed, but her laugh faded into gravity under the prolonged implication of Mrs. Fisher's look. We did come back alone, if that's so very dreadful. But whose fault was it? The Duchess was spending the night at Simia's with the Crown Princess. Bertha got bored with the show, and went off early, promising to meet us at the station. We turned up on time, but she didn't turn up at all. Miss Bart made this announcement in the tone of one who presents, with careless assurance, a complete vindication. But Mrs. Fisher received it in a manner almost inconsequent. She seemed to have lost sight of her friend's part in the incident. Her inward vision had taken another slant. Bertha never turned up at all? Then how on earth did she get back? Oh, by the next train, I suppose. There were two extra ones for the fate. At any rate, I know she's safe on the yacht, though I haven't yet seen her. But you see, it was not my fault, Lily summed up. Not your fault, that Bertha didn't turn up? My poor child, if only you don't have to pay for it. Mrs. Fisher rose as he had seen Mrs. Bry surging back in her direction. Tea, there's Louisa, and I must be off. Oh, we're on the best of terms externally. We're lunching together. But at heart it's me she's lunching on, she explained. And with a last hand clasp and a last look, she added. Remember, I leave her to you. She's hovering now, ready to take you in. Lily carried the impression of Mrs. Fisher's leave taking away with her from the casino doors. As he had accomplished, before leaving, the first step toward a reinstatement in Mrs. Bry's good graces. An affable advance, a vague murmur that they must see more of each other, an elusive glance to a near future that was felt to include the Duchess as well as the Sabrina. How easily it was all done, if one possessed the knack of doing it. She wondered at herself, as he had so often wondered, that, possessing the knack, she did not more consistently exercise it. But sometimes she was forgetful, and sometimes, could it be that she was proud? Today, at any rate, as he had been vaguely conscious of a reason for sinking her pride, had in fact even sunk it to the point of suggesting to Lord Hubert Dacey, whom she ran across on the casino steps, that he might really get the Duchess to dine with the Brys if she undertook to have them masked on the Sabrina. Lord Hubert had promised his help, with the readiness on which she could always count. It was his only way of ever reminding her that he had once been ready to do so much more for her. Her path, in short, seemed to smooth itself before her as she advanced, yet the faint stir of uneasiness persisted. Had it been produced, she wondered, by her chance meeting with Selden? She thought not. Time and change seemed so completely to have relegated him to his proper distance. The sudden and exquisite reaction from her anxieties had the effect of throwing the recent past so far back that even Selden, as part of it, retained a certain air of unreality. And he had made it so clear that they were not to meet again, that he had merely dropped down to Nice for a day or two, and had almost his foot on the next steamer. No, that part of the past had merely surged up for a moment on the fleeing surface of events. And now that it was submerged again, the uncertainty, the apprehension persisted. they grew to sudden acuteness as she caught sight of George Dorset descending the steps of the Hotel de Paris and making for her across the square. As he had meant to drive down to the quay and regain the yacht, but she now had the immediate impression that something more was to happen first. "Which way are you going? Shall we walk a bit?" he began, putting the second question before the first was answered, and not waiting for a reply to either, before he directed her silently toward the comparative seclusion of the lower gardens. She detected in him at once all the signs of extreme nervous tension. The skin was puffed out under his sunken eyes, and its sallowness had paled to a leaden white against which his irregular eyebrows and long reddish mustache were relieved with a saturnine effect. His appearance, in short, presented an odd mixture of the bedraggled and the ferocious. He walked beside her in silence, with quick precipitate steps, till they reached the embowered slopes to the east of the casino. Then, pulling up abruptly, he said, "Have you seen Bertha?" "No, when I left the yacht she was not yet up." He received this with a laugh like the whirring sound in a disabled clock. "And not yet up? Had she gone to bed? Do you know at what time she came on board?"
"This morning at 7,
he exclaimed.
"At 7?
Lily started. "What happened? An accident to the train?" He laughed again. "They missed the train, all the trains they had to drive back." "Well," she hesitated, feeling at once how little even this necessity accounted for the fatal lapse of hours. "Well, they couldn't get a carriage at once at that time of night. You know, the explanatory note made it almost seem as though he were putting the case for his wife, and when they finally did, it was only a one-horse cab, and the horse was lame."
"How tiresome."
"I see," she affirmed, with the more earnestness, because she was so nervously conscious that she did not. And after a pause she added, "I'm so sorry, but ought we to have
Gutenberg edition?"
End of chapter.